Welcome to Flipping the Script. I'm Lindsay Cuiava, your host and the artistic director of Re Theater, an online theater and education consulting company. Each week, we bring you new episodes about the theater world and theater education in an effort to revolutionize the way that theater is seen at the school and community level and inspire you to make art that matters wherever you may be. All right. I am super, super thrilled about this week's episode because this week's episode is such a fantastic case study of what can happen when you take the right people with the right intentions, put them in a room, and musical theater is used as a tool to engage both your students and the community and bring people together and really make a resounding and tangible impact. You've heard me talk on the podcast a million times. If you've listened to this episode, any of our previous episodes, you know this, that I am so big about intentionality and making art that matters. And I think sometimes we talk about it like very generally on this podcast and not so much in specifics. And I am just really excited by this week's episode because it really does talk about the specifics and looks at a show that we've talked about in this podcast. So this week I'm joined by Melanie and Evelyn from Dandelion Drama, and they are going to talk about their process working on The Lion King. The Lion King has come up a lot on this podcast because it is a show that a lot of people have opinions on, and it's kind of in a gray area of like, how do we perform this work even though It maybe can be seen as cultural appropriation. And is there a way, because, I mean, they are animals, but it also is taking a lot from African culture, is there a way that white students can do this without it being problematic? I don't have a clear answer on that. I think that Lion King lives in this kind of like ambiguous land. I mean, there's clear shows that I can be like, no, you can't do that, like West Side Story or Miss Saigon or any of the other shows that we've really talked and dove into on this podcast. But Lion King is one that it's kind of like, I don't know. And this, we don't have a definitive answer for you at the end of this podcast either. But what I will say is that the way that Dandelion Drama approached doing this show is the way that I would hope all educators and all theater makers would approach work, because it's so intentional, it's so beautiful, and it really, really demonstrates what can happen when we just put that extra effort in. And it's not like we're putting in a ton of effort, but just a little bit, and how we can bring people together using the arts. So yeah, I'm super excited for you guys to listen to this. And I also would love to hear from some of you guys. Have any of you ever really focused on community engagement with any of the shows that you've produced? If you have, I would love to hear. So if you want to write in, I'm going to share those out in the coming weeks, just because I think that when we see that other people are doing this work and see the impact that people are making using the arts, it can be great fodder for us when we need to like talk to our administration, but it also can like, you know, make our hearts happy and remind us why the arts are important and just fill us up as artists. So if you would love to share what you have been doing, I would love to hear that. So go ahead and send me an email. But yes, without any further ado, let's get into this week's episode and learn all about community engagement and the magic that it can create. For joining me.
Thanks for having us.
So great to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Oh, I'm like, okay, so we have like a new recording studio set up in my office, and I'm trying to like get it adjusted so I can see Evelyn and Melanie. Otherwise, it would be awkward. So I'm so glad you guys are here, and I'm so excited to talk about today's topics. But before we go into that, do you guys mind introducing yourselves just like to the audience a little bit? And I think even if you want to share a little bit about like how you came to the world of theater, like the 30-second version, which I'm sure is very long, that would be really awesome.
Great.
Cool.
So I'm Melanie Lyons, and I am the artistic director of Dandelion Drama, which I founded about 10 years ago.
Oh my gosh, it's so exciting.
I know. We're in our 10th season. And I also wear some hats doing a lot of mentorship of teaching artists and professional development. And I'm also a playwright, and yeah. I've been obsessed with musical theater for a long time. Pretty much every senior project I did in high school and in college was writing a musical. So, yep, I joined Lindsay in the total musical theater nerd category.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, it's so cool because one of my first teaching jobs was at Dandelion. I think my second one. So that was cool. And as that's actually how I found where I wanted to live in Seattle. It took us 5 years later to find a house. But I'm like right down the street from the elementary school I first taught at. And it was like, oh my gosh, I love this area. I need to be here. So Melanie is totally responsible for that.
It's a good place to be.
It sure is. And we'll... I want to talk at the end if you want to like talk more about the work that you've written, because you have some really great stuff that I think it'd be cool for people to know about.
Sure.
And potentially, you know, see if they're still looking for scripts and stuff. So cool. Awesome. Okay, cool. So Evelyn.
All right. So I am Evelyn Asobo. I am an artistic director, choreographer in Dandelion Drama.
Uh-huh.
So it's funny how I got into this.
Yeah.
It's been about 2 years ago when I met this wonderful Melanie.
Uh-huh.
That, she introduced me into it, and I just fell in love with it. At the beginning, it was kind of, working with the kids, you
mm-hmm.
know, I've worked with kids before, but not as many kids as, you know, directing
yeah.
and doing choreography and stuff, but... I fell in love with it, so here I am.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So do you have more of a dance background then, and that's how you came to theater?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, what is, like, do you want to tell us a little bit about your dance background? I'm just nerdy because I love dance. So
okay,
I'm
so
curious.
About... Except ballet.
Okay.
which I don't know anything about it, but about anything.
Okay.
You know, like
yeah.
growing up, we danced a lot, you know, around
uh-huh.
any music that would play, we would be dancing and stuff. So I go to a church where we played tambourine. So
okay.
It was kind of like dance incorporated in it.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, kind of.
Just like, just always was like a part of like what you were doing.
Always, and, yes.
Oh, that's so
mm-hmm.
cool. And so was
yeah.
it... what was the transition like going like from the dance world into musical theater?
The transition was actually not as hard as I thought it would be.
Uh-huh.
You know, especially when I, you know, working with Melanie, I've learned a lot because
yeah.
it was like just
she's fantastic.
Yeah, like just her techniques
thanks,
and the way
guys.
She dealt with the, you know,
yeah.
she would handle kids and just I think on the second. The second musical we did, I felt like I could direct.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah. So
wow.
It kind of, yeah.
That's awesome. And so what was your first musical then?
The first one was
Wizard of Oz?
The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, short story. So I basically saw a dance routine that Evelyn choreographed for
yeah.
her daughter and was so impressed
oh.
and just had known her character because, I mean, you're the same, Lindsay, like... There's a difference. You could find amazing directors and choreographers, but they've got to love kids and
oh,
they've
cool.
got to be super on fire about making art that matters, right?
Right.
Like we have that same. And Dandelion's mission is to grow more compassionate, creative, and courageous kids. So
mm-hmm.
when I met Evelyn and I saw her awesome artistry, but also her heart, I knew that she needed to be a part of this crazy, awesome stuff that we're doing. So.
Oh, that's so cool. And you just have like a knack for finding like just really like, heart-centered and, like, amazing artists that necessarily, like, especially,
yeah.
I think, in a town where there is, like, a quote-unquote professional industry, I hate that term, but, you know, I think that, like, sometimes, like, it can be hard, especially, like, in the education space, like,
mm-hmm.
do we go with people who have that quote-unquote professional experience, especially when working with kids, like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've seen it go really badly. Like,
mm-hmm.
where you'll bring in a person who has, like, is an awesome,
mm-hmm.
awesome professional.
Yeah.
But working with kids.
That's one of my first interview questions is, like, hey, you've got this amazing resume, and you're doing all these amazing things, but do you actually like children?
Yeah. Right. Well, because you have
yeah.
to. And how many teaching artists out there
are not actually teaching art, especially in, not, this is like not a dig at Seattle, but a little bit. Like there, how many, like teaching artistry outside of New York City is really hard to come by. Mm-hmm. And so like people who are teaching artists usually are just actors who necessarily maybe aren't working full mm-hmm. time. And that's mm-hmm. totally cool. Mm-hmm. But it's totally different. Mm-hmm. And I love that you put that first, especially being like, you're like what? Like we're like 10 minutes outside of Seattle. Mm-hmm. So like, you could go a different route, and I think it's really...
Well, yeah. And I think that's the secret sauce to Dandelion's success is that we're actually building community for our teaching artists. We're valuing them. We're one of the best paying. We might be the best paying.
You guys were teaching $10 artists. Over.
Yeah.
And you paid for prep time.
Yeah. And so we really invest in our teaching artists. And I think the moment that I knew we were onto something amazing is when our teaching artists and directors were showing up at each other's shows.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the stereotype is, sorry, can't I have rehearsal, or sorry, can't I have my own show. But for our teaching artists to be showing up and supporting each other's work,
that's huge
for everybody, right? Because you know your peer gets the heart, blood, sweat, and tears that went into your production.
Right.
Whereas a parent or an audience member won't get it. You know, they'll see the end result, but they won't get it as much as a peer artist. So.
Yeah. Well, especially if it's kid, like youth-based theater, and you're coming to see, like, your friend's work, like, that speaks, like, so much to the community that you're building.
Yeah.
And just having been a part of it for a very small part of time or portion of my life. And it's so fascinating. And I think that's like, I love that the community is such a part of what Dandelion and what you guys do. So, because that's then translated over into the rehearsal process as well. I would say. Is that true? I guess I've never worked on a production. I've just taught.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely, every part of what we do with our musicals is community engagement based, right? We start with a parent meeting, and so that parents and students can come and understand what we're about and our mission. And then we always start our audition process with a community meeting with the students, identifying what they want out of the process. We always have a survey where they get to say, I want to grow as an actor. I want to grow as a singer. I want to grow as a dancer. Mm-hmm. Or have other questions that they can say, you know, this is what I want the director to know about me. And so all kinds of community engagement work happens before we start auditioning, which for many reasons is super helpful.
Yeah, like so helpful. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I get questions about all the time from teachers, especially, and actually, you know, it's not even necessarily from teachers. I think it's more from folks that work in the, like, community theater or, like, youth education theater space outside of schools. They always are asking about, like, okay, how much do I lead with, like, the vision or the intention behind my show? And I am, like, super opinionated, obviously, and I'm just like, everything should be community engagement. It's all I do. But Melanie, you are so much more like, I just feel like you're just like a magical theater fairy, and you're just like so.
Wow.
Yeah, like you are. Like you're just like, you're such like a great, like calming personality, and I feel like you're so much more like in the center of things. Whereas I'm like, nope, I'm on fire about this thing. So, what is your opinion on this? Like, how much do you lead with the intention of the production that you guys are working with right away?
You know, that's interesting. I don't know that I think we lead with the intention of our organization and we live our values and have our values very close at hand all the time.
Okay.
And so I think then we look to translate that in the shows that we choose.
Mm. So it kind of like goes hand in hand then.
Yeah, I think so. And then, I mean, so you're coming in, we're bleh, bleh, words. We actually wanted to formalize our community engagement a little bit more and be a little more intentional about that idea of like having that why and how is that why translate into how we engage the community. And so this year we did apply for a grant and we got $1,500 so that we could spend $300 at each production to help be more specific on that. And so this year we did a lot more leading with that, saying to our producer team and our creative team, hey, we have $300 to bring in an expert, to work with a dramaturg, to bring in a guest or have a workshop happen. And so then that kind of forced the hand of being like, okay, you as a director need to kind of come up with your why and what's the best way to spend that bonus money to do that.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I think this year we were pushed more into that to be more specific, whereas generally we're always really big on our mission and our values, and that helps lead us down that road.
Yeah. Okay. That's so interesting. And I mean, you talk all the time, I mean, with your like work and like consulting with theater educators about like your values are like the core of everything you do. And that would be a great podcast to have a different time to have you come on and chat about. And so I think that that's like really smart though, is like if you have a really clear mission and really clear values, then you don't need to necessarily lay out like, well, this is why we're doing this show and worry that, are you going to turn people off by doing that?
And, you know, it has to be community engagement and your why in your show selection and how you're going to direct that show. That all really comes out in the foundation, right? So, for example, as I've met with equity leaders, one of the things they've said is that the easiest thing that we can do to tell our students that they are going to be recognized and that they have importance is to have someone on our staff that looks like them. And so that's been a huge thing for me, is like, how can I make sure we have both men, women, sparkly people, you know, people of all different nationalities and colors on our creative teams. Because as soon as they see someone that looks like them, they're not as worried that they're going to be pushed to the side, right? Or that they really believe you when you say everyone in this room has a spot at these lead roles. And so I think that has been a huge thing to slowly make those choices. But another thing that's really been a guiding is this idea of every production being a window to learn more rather than a reflection of what this specific culture of a specific story is. So having it be an opportunity to go deeper rather than like, this is our version or this is, right, this is a copy of something that exists. Yeah. So,
ooh, that's like so interesting. I mean, I've heard you say this like window phrase a million times, but like when you compare it against the mirror, that's really interesting because of course I'm going to murder this now. but there's that famous, is it Stella Adler? Somebody famous from like the group theater Stanislavski world had that quote that's like, theater is holding up a mirror to society. So that we can see what's there. And that's a really interesting way instead of, because I love that quote. Even though I can't quote it right now, because of course I can't. I'm trying to. But I think that the window metaphor is really interesting, especially when you come to youth theater or to theater education and theater for young people. And so that's a really great segue, because I'm super excited to talk about specifically the work that you guys did with the production of The Lion King. And when, I don't remember, were we just like at lunch one day and you were telling me about it? And I was like, how have I not talked to you about this? So I'm really excited to talk about The Lion King specifically, because on the podcast, we've had guests on before. If you haven't listened to, I believe it's episode, it's Chessa Betancourt, and it's either the first episode or the eighth episode, because she did two, and she talked about race and equity on stage, and we talked about The Lion King quite a bit, and The Lion King is a tricky one because everybody's playing animals, right? But the stage production does pull a lot from African culture, and so, I don't know, it's always interesting, and I love how you guys approached it. So I guess, like, let's start at the very beginning. And before we jump into that, I also want to say, like, I told you guys before we started recording, but I don't expect, like, that you guys are, like, the representation and, like, this is the end-all, be-all, like, the expert answer, because I don't think there is an answer. I think going into this, I hope that, like, as a listener, you're able to to think critically about the work that you're choosing and the intention behind it, and then make mm-hmm. your own decision. Because I know there's one theater that I just recently talked to that they just did The Lion King, and they're like, we'll never do it again, because I felt like the whole time I was doing something that I shouldn't be doing.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh man, I don't even know. I have so many emotions and feelings about that I can't even express. So as you're listening, we're not saying like absolutely do The Lion King, absolutely don't, but hopefully it gives you some perspective and some insight. So let's go back to the beginning. So how did you guys decide to yes. select The Lion King?
Yes, so we had just done a really wonderful production with Evelyn as our choreographer for Wizard of Oz. When so we produce musicals and drama clubs over 12, 13 schools. So we have a wide variety of different schools and needs. And I had some parent volunteer producers pitch that they were interested in The Lion King. And I was like, I think it might be a good time to do that show. And so I just asked a few probing questions because I knew that that particular school had a very strong cultural celebration every year as well.
Mm. Oh, cool.
And so I said, great, we can do this show if. And so I just posted to them that number one, just nuts and bolts, we needed to make sure we didn't have any costumes in that pool. And so did they feel like they had someone that would maybe be able to help with costumes, because, okay. right, that's just a practicality.
Right.
And then I also asked them if they would be willing to really do some hard work in that school to make sure that every child knew they were welcome to be part of the musical, which we do anyway, but really doing a push to make sure that everyone knew it was for them. And then also, if they would really do some work to contact families who had participated in cultural celebrations that had African heritage to invite them into the process. And so we brainstormed a bunch of different ways, whether that was coming in to speak about their particular country of origin or to, all kinds of things, just really having it open. And then also giving them the opportunity to have a table in the lobby, because I was worried too about Africa is a ginormous continent, mm-hmm. and I did not want it to be, here's what Africa looks like, right? And I wanted it to be a window where kids could learn more about the incredible diversity. And then the third thing that I knew, I knew we had two resources in our back pocket. One was that we had Evelyn, who's amazing and could really take leadership of that creative team so that we would stay on track. And then I'd also been developing relationships with JHP Cultural, which is a wonderful, wonderful group of first-generation African immigrants who are incredibly talented across tons of different musical and performing arts disciplines, but they're also like teachers and CEOs and accountants, like amazing people.
Okay.
So I knew we had that alive cultural group in mm-hmm. our area as well that we could call on as a resource. So they wholeheartedly said, yep, we can click all those boxes. And so from there we proceeded.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a lot. That's beautiful. I love hearing the process as always. But especially to hear how you approached it. Because like, I think a lot of people just did The Lion King this last year because of the movie. Like that's the amount of times I hear people be like, well, we're doing West Side Story because Steven Spielberg, he's doing that movie. And so we're going to we're going to capitalize on that. And I'm like, oh boy.
I know.
Don't do that, please. Although West Side Story is great, but also has its problems and issues and all that too. So, totally. So I guess, so you checked these boxes before you even said yes to mm-hmm. doing this. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Evelyn, what was like your initial, like when they came to you, like, were you like, I'm totally on board right away?
I was excited actually.
Yeah.
Well, I was excited because I grew up just loving Lion King.
Okay.
It's like my favorite animated movie or whatever. Like my favorite movie, let's say that. So I was excited about it. Uh-huh. And I was also excited to to teach the kids about, you know, something about Africa. Because a lot of kids just know, you know, when you hear anything about Africa, it's always bad things, you know, poverty and all of those things that we see on TV. But also I wanted to show them, to teach them, I had in my mind that I have to teach them like our culture, how we approach each other, how, you know, what are the African values in the process? And which, that's something that I did actually. And Melanie gave me that that platform to do so. Like when we were, because after you order, you know, when they send you the books and all of that, you know, for Lion King, they send you 3 African drums, which we call Zembe. They do send those. So I got to explain to the kids what Zembe means, you know, how it is, how we use it in Africa. Of course, me growing up, we didn't really use it because I was raised in a big city. But in villages, which I explained the student, that in villages, if you hear, you can be washing clothes or cooking, but they would use a bigger one if you hear the sound of Zembe. Because there will be somebody who's going to come and make the sound. That means everybody stop what you're doing and come near to listen to a message that we have for all of you. So that was a way of getting all the kids' attention, to tell them you have to respect my Zembe, because this is respectful. You know, we respect this back home. When you hear this, you're going to have to be quiet and listen to the leader, because I have something important to tell you. It was kind of, you know, it was a way to tell them, be quiet, don't talk anymore, listen to me. I'm the only one who's supposed to talk at this moment. And one other thing that I taught the kids was how we address each other back home. And I explained to them, I'm your teacher, I'm not your friend. You're not supposed to call me Evelyn, because you and I, we did not go to the same elementary school, you know. That's how we were raised. I am not supposed to call somebody who could be my parents. Some, you know, people could be my parents by their name. So either they were auntie or they were miss or Mr. Uncle. That's how we address each other. So during the whole process, like the whole rehearsal, you know, the whole musical process, none of them called us Melanie, Evelyn, and Brian. We were called Miss Melanie, Miss Evelyn, and Mr. Brian. And even the parent chaperone, because they could be their parents, they had to be, they had to call them Miss, just because that's how we do it back home.
So interesting.
They got to learn all of this, and I was really impressed how the kids, you know, how they took it. It's not like they just did it because I told them. They learned from it, and they were respectful because they, you know, because of where they learned.
Oh, that's so interesting. And so, because is normally a dandelion, do they call the adults by their names? Oh, interesting. And so has that continued? Do they still continue to call you Miss or Mr.? Or do they go back now to just first names?
We're about to start our next season, so we'll find out. We have auditions in a couple weeks.
And so do you think you want to continue that? Like, what, did you see a difference in like the way the students like responded in the room using that? I'm just like very curious.
You know, it's a good question. Maybe some students more than others. You've always got your squirrely cute kid. I actually am about to start a new teaching gig, and I'm actually asking them to call me Mrs. Lyons. I do think that was inspired by Evelyn. And also I'm still trying to come up with my nickname. I had a choir teacher who went by Mrs. Wilson. But then as students earned, you know, her respect, she allowed them to call her Willie. So it wasn't her first name, but it was like a nickname based off her last name. So I'm excited to go into this new gig. And I do feel like I am ready to have a little bit more of a respectful distance.
Oh, that's so interesting. Evelyn, did you see any change in like the students? Because like, I guess like if you grew up calling people like that, right? Like, with that more respect, and then that's not how normally that's done. Like, did you see a change? Did you think or?
Like Melanie said, it just depended on, you know, kids.
Sure.
But I would say, I don't know if it was because they called me Miss Evelyn that, I don't know, maybe because a lot of times, the thing that the thing that was really obvious, it was as soon as I hit the Zembe, they would be like, shh, all of them want to listen. you know, that was that was something that was really vivid. But for Miss, I would say some of them I could see.
Okay.
When they called me Miss Evelyn, it was with a certain, you know, a different kind of respect than if they called me. Because, I mean, in my experience, you know, being raised in Africa, when I called somebody by their name, I thought that they were my buddy. I could make jokes that were inappropriate, you know. But when I called you Miss or Auntie, I wouldn't address, even when I have a conversation with you, there is a different kind of respect that I have to, you know, to give you. So,
yeah.
So I think some of them, I could see that.
Okay.
Some of them, of course, they just want to have fun and, you know, they would ask the way they want. But I think I saw a lot of kids, like, respect being a little bit different than before. Yeah.
Oh, it's so interesting. Yeah. Okay.
I think we have always approached after school, our rehearsals are after school a little bit differently, because we do talk to our students. I mean, we're talking older elementary and junior high students. We do talk to them about how it's a privilege to be in the show and that it does require a lot of maturity. So we've also laid down that base of, you know, you don't have to raise your hand and get permission from me to go to the bathroom. You can have some autonomy to just let the parent volunteer know at the door and go out. But you're also thinking ahead and you're making wise choices. You're not like going to the bathroom or getting a snack when it's your scene. So I do think we talk a lot about respect in the room and how we will treat them with respect and maybe above their age and their and treat them with more maturity. And because we're doing a lot of demanding excellence. And so I think that was a good step that Evelyn introduced us, because we'd always just done like our first names. But it felt appropriate, and it was a great way to introduce it.
Well, and because it's not just like, and now we're changing everything because we feel like it, which, I mean, no students ever respond well to. And I love that it was coming from, like, you know, we're actually, like, going to make this process about more than just the material. Like, we want, we're going to bring in some elements of this culture. I meant to ask you this, like, a million times. Where in Africa did you grow up, if you don't mind sharing?
Oh, yeah, of course, in the Congo. So there are two Congos in Africa, actually. There was the Republic of Congo and the Democratic Republic of Congo, which was Zaire before. So that's where I'm from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Okay, great. Yeah. And what city did you grow up in?
In Kinshasa.
Okay, yeah, great.
It's the capital,
Okay, awesome. I just was curious. And so in The Lion King, is there any specific cultural references to any specific part of Africa? Or are you able to, like, mold it to what works for you?
So Africa, actually, though it's a continent with different countries, we almost all of us have the almost the same culture. You know, even when I, for example, just addressing adult, that's the whole Africa.
Yeah,
it's, you can barely see in a country in Africa where a kid calls an adult by their name. Like, all the countries in Africa that I can recall, nobody does that. And like in Lion King, even the way you would see the woman, for example, when Nala comes, she's called by Scar, who is mean, and she comes gracefully, even if she's not treated the way she was supposed to be treated, just the way she would come in. Stand before who is supposed to be the king, just kind of that image of not only obedience but also
respect for the title or for
respect or submission, and that's in like in the whole African, like the whole continent. I've seen that. So the culture is almost similar, like in all the countries.
I never knew that. And that's so interesting, because I feel like, so, because I always like, and this is a horrible comparison, but it is, we'll cut it out. But because Europe is so, so different. Each country you go to is like crazy different. But I feel like in America or in the United States, it's not like, there's a lot of similarities across across the country. And so that's kind of how, is that similar-ish you get?
Yeah, it's a bit similar. Like almost, of course, like each country is different, you know, but we have a lot of similarity. Like even the food, the a lot of countries we speak almost, like almost like five or six countries we speak the same language. So yeah, it's similar.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there are a lot of different African languages mm-hmm. in the show. And so there's some Swahili.
Okay. Yes.
And then what other languages were?
It was Zulu, Swahili. Swahili is spoken in the east of Africa.
Okay.
In my country, actually, we have some regions when they speak Swahili. And then you go to a different country, they speak Swahili. You go to Zimbabwe, they speak Swahili. And so they took... Because in South Africa, they don't speak Swahili.
Okay.
So they took Zulu, which is spoken in South Africa, and then they took Swahili from other countries in Africa and they put it in the show.
Yes. Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And what was so unique to find in Evelyn is that she speaks at least three languages.
Yeah. Oh. I understand just a few words in Swahili, which okay. I don't really speak it, but I can great, you know, ask how is your family and things like that. But yeah, I speak... What languages? French, Lingala, English, which I'm learning. And then I speak like four languages.
Oh, wow. Actually, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And so that came in handy because you do have to speak, you know, you do have to sing. The students sing in multiple languages. So
right.
that is a really great challenge and something that's really beautiful about this show.
Yeah.
And so having Evelyn to both be there to... enrich the process in so many ways. She was also able to really have a great ear for language and help with the pronunciations.
Yeah, because even if there are many, many, many languages, like in my country, I don't know how many, I don't speak all of them. It's like 20 something dialects in my country.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you put like in Africa, there are some countries who have different dialects too. So there are so many languages, but when it's written, mm-hmm. you can read it. Even if you're not from that country, because it's written almost the same way. You pronounce, it is written the same way. That's why I was able, when I was reading some songs, you know, and Lion King, even if I did not understand what they meant, but mm-hmm. I could read them correctly, no problem.
Okay.
Because they spelled the same way.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And so then this again is kind of a weird question, but like, does the script have the translations of like what they mean in English? So the kids, okay, great. I've never seen the Lion King mm-hmm. script before. So like the kids actually understand what it is they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Yeah. My question, otherwise I would be like, did you translate it for them? Like, or how did they figure that out? That's so, so great. And I'm sure I'm just like now imagining how many schools across the country are performing this and just like murdering the pronunciation on these words.
Right.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, the biggest thing was teaching everybody how to say properly the opening line.
Yeah.
Right? The no, fucking no. Like, right? Everyone has their own version of that they've made up from listening to the track.
Yeah. Right. But there's like a specific pronunciation for it.
Yes. Do you want to say that for us?
Yeah.
Well, it's Nansingo nya nabakiti baba. So
so that was a lot of fun, really, with our Rafikis making that they all
Well, and Rafiki speaks mostly in another language, goes in and out frequently. Is that mm-hmm. is that the case in the youth version as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh man.
And there was another word that Rafiki had to sing. And it was really, it's a hard, even for me when I was reading it, I read it differently than when I listened to it. I'm like, you know, the original one, it's sing-o. So you have to know your tongue.
Oh my gosh.
And we did not expect Rafiki to sing it that way.
That'd be tough.
Yes. Oh yes, it can be tough, yeah.
Oh, but that's so, what an awesome experience for the young people to be able to like actually... really understand the material that they're mm-hmm. working on in a unique way. So, okay, so besides those factors, I mean, which sounds like unbelievable, is there anything else that you guys brought into the rehearsal room that was different when approaching The Lion King? So, like to get into the cultural engagement aspect of it.
I mean, I think I wanted to just admit that I did make a really big mistake on part of this process. And so... I wanted to both say, be as you invite more people into your rehearsal room and as you engage with the community, like, be okay that you're probably going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And don't let that, like, don't let that fear stop you from inviting people in. And so I just wanted to share about, we had a really wonderful woman who did not have a child in the show, but was a parent at the school. Mm-hmm. And my parent producers invited her in and said, hey, we'd love to have your input in the creative side. She's an artist. But what ended up happening is that we weren't officially introduced. Okay. And it was really hard because she was at our scene design meeting and she's a visual artist as well. And so nobody introduced me to her and she thought I was just another parent.
Oh.
And so we had a really like hard thing where she was engaged and like trying to like suggest all of these things. And then I was, as the director, saying, oh, well, you know, we have to also think about these aspects. And I think at one point she thought I was kind of shutting her down.
Oh.
And then I came to find out that she is like an incredibly well-renowned artist from her country of origin.
Oh,
she,
shoot.
You know, it was like basically a supermodel from that country. And so it was really embarrassing because I did not mean to disrespect her, but because she didn't understand my role in the production and because I wasn't able to have like be introduced to her as a partner. I think everything like was ironed out once we figured it out.
Okay, good.
But it was just a lost opportunity because I think she would have been able to engage so much more and take on. I mean, she was like volunteering to hand paint leggings for the entire cast and all of these things.
Oh my
But
gosh.
Because we didn't have a framework of the producers didn't really explain to her like the budget and the time constraints and things like that. It was just a bummer. So anyway, I just wanted to say that like, don't be afraid to engage with your community and like own your mistakes. And so it all did work out. And I was able to say, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm the director. I'm not trying to, you know, poo-poo your ideas. I'm just trying to make sure that we have the framework for budget and like time constraints and all of those things. And so just make sure as you bring in those experts that you take some time to like get to know them, their past, their qualifications, because I would have love to honor her in a much grander way, but I lost that opportunity because of an awkward start. So that
said, thank you for sharing that because I think that like that's like it's always so hard when those things happen, especially that sounds so unintentional, just like a comedy of errors around like just like everything.
And she's just like, who are you? Like, why are you shooting down my ideas? And I'm like, oh my gosh,
no.
So sorry.
Yeah. Oh gosh. But I mean, but that is like, I'm glad that you still are like, I love that you still feel like, you know, bring people in because you'll just grow and
absolutely.
You'll be able to produce so much more interesting work with your community. Mm-hmm.
But we also brought, GHP, like
yes,
you said.
Talk about that experience.
Yeah, so the group that Melanie talked about, like all Africans, like they're artists, and we brought them in, and he would come to rehearsals and play his drums, and the kids were really so drawn into that.
Yeah.
You know, just so interested in watching him play and stuff, but he loved it so much that he volunteered, like coming at for the all the two productions, all the shows that we had at the end.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, he was playing live the drums for us for the whole musical.
That is crazy. Mm-hmm.
It was really good. You know, to hear the drums even at the end of the song, just like the CD. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And he came at with the table, you know, at the end, there was a table at the lobby where people would come and try to see what they do and things like that. It was really interesting just to bring that so people would find out about, you know, what they do and how they play the drums, and people had questions. And I even got to meet a parent who happened, I didn't know, but he, because he was Caucasian, and as we're speaking, and he's like, I am from South Africa, you know, with his South African's accent. I'm like, really? You know, he was really excited to see his daughter play, you know, being on the show. It was really amazing.
Oh, Oh my gosh.
He was great.
And I want to say, I think the thing that surprised me, that shouldn't have surprised me, but everyone that we engaged to be part of this production, mm-hmm. even though we only, you know, like JHP, we could only really give them a meager stipend of like 150.
Right.
Right. And then we stipended Evelyn for 150 because we had the $300 budget from the grant to really honor her, the extra that she was giving to the production. But every single person we engaged, also this other parent that I was saying, they, I do think that they walked away feeling celebrated. And I think the evidence of that is that they then gave more above and beyond mm-hmm. what we could stipend them. We honored them with what money we could, mm-hmm. but JHP coming in and Eben from that group coming and being part of our dress rehearsal and being part of our performances, just volunteering his time. And Evelyn showed up to dress rehearsal with the most beautiful gifts. So you have to talk about that.
Yeah, what did you do?
Well, I thought because we were celebrating, you know, Africa, mm-hmm. African culture and stuff. So I thought it would be great if us, you know, as the artists, as the teachers, if we could wear African clothes, you know, outfits. So I made some outfits for us to wear for both nights. And
So yeah, not just one. So the music director got two different vests and I got a skirt for opening night and a beautiful vest for closing night. So everyone had like two amazing outfits to wear.
Oh my gosh.
Which was so great because I think that's a difference, right? If I just showed up in African garb and was like, hey, look at me, like, right?
Oh my God. I also just had like a horrible nightmare image of like how many people are like, I'm going to wear cheetah print. It's like opening night of Lion King. And I'm just like, no.
honored with the gift of that special fabric and mm-hmm. with that handiwork and to be able to wear it as a gift and as a memento of respect and celebration mm-hmm. was so different. And it was just honoring. Yeah. It was just honoring.
Okay. So now two-ish tougher questions. So, how do you think educators can do this work without it being cultural appropriation? Or is the script of The Lion King just like really not set up to be done in a way that is would be appropriation? Does that make sense? Because like, guys, you really worked close with it. And I think this is something that is important to consider. Because if you're talking about something like Miss Saigon or West Side Story, we could go on and on and on about all the things that have issues in it. And I've always just been curious with this script. And I guess, Evelyn, as you, as somebody who is from Africa and, like, this is your culture, like, I'm just curious about that. Like, are there ways that it could be done wrong that would be offensive? Or is the script just set up that it's pretty accessible?
I don't think that there will be ways that could be done. It will be, you know, people would feel offended. That's a good question. I think it can be done without having an Evelyn. Uh-huh. You know,
everyone needs an Evelyn.
Yeah, so I think it could be totally be done. It just depends on the, because I know as a director, you're doing it with the great intentions, you know,
right.
Without trying to offend anybody, as long as it's done the right way,
yeah.
I guess. Mm-hmm. Milan, do you have any?
Yeah, I mean, I felt uncomfortable doing it without having that engagement piece. And so, I mean, it's a hard one. I know I've heard people hide behind, oh, come on, it's a cartoon, it's animals. Mm-hmm. But I do think that as Evelyn brought to the surface, so even the script and even the characters and how they relate to each other are saturated in African culture. And so it would be weird if you were directing and coaching students to be like rolling their eyes at Scar or even like having Simba or Mufasa like be like disrespectful to Mufasa, mm-hmm. which I think you could interpret some of those scenes, but really right. Simba is not being disrespectful. He's just mm-hmm. like this eager little bouncing
exactly.
child, right? That's like mm-hmm. kind of pushing boundaries without being disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot in there where, you know, that roar is, that's the final word. You don't question the authority. So I do think it would be a missed opportunity if directors weren't at least bringing in some kind of dramaturg or guest or someone to at least coach them and have some conversation about that. And I think most schools and most communities have some kind of cultural celebration. They do, and there are a lot of easy ways that you could invite people to come and have an African feast or have some kind of cultural celebration. So I think it's smart, too, because when people feel celebrated and feel connected, then that's also going to up your ticket sales, right? So it's a catch-22. I know I personally, with some of our schools, would not have felt comfortable doing the show without the kind of work we had been doing over the last few years.
Okay.
Leading up to it.
Sure.
But I mean, there's also just casting things. Like I think you can do it, but you do need to have some conscious casting choices. You can't put the only African male that you have in your cast as Mufasa or Simba. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to really be careful how you're doing that.
Yeah, you know, now that you say that, if you're you have that diversity for the musical. That's true. I think it's going to be much better if you have someone who can relate to the musical. So it can be an opportunity for the kids also to know that what they're doing, you know, what are Africans? What is Africa? What are the cultures? Why does Simba have to act this way or Nala? So they would have at least an idea of the reactions. Because a lot of times, I remember even myself, I've watched movies before. I'm like, oh, just a movie, but I couldn't really get it. Why did the person had to say this word this way? Why did that girl? Because it happens, I have a daughter who was raised in Africa, purely African. So when she comes here, the first time she came here, she could not understand how my son, who was born here, would not listen sometimes. When I tell him go to the room, he just wanna stay. She will be shocked. She's like, whoa, he's not gonna go? He should go right away. Because she was raised when you tell her, stop, don't touch that. She's not gonna touch it. Because that's how we were raised, you know. Oh. When an adult tells you something, you do it right away. When your parents tell you they don't want you to hang out with that crowd, you do not hang out or you get in big trouble. Just, you know, that's just an example. So I watched a lot of movies where I was like, oh, I didn't quite understand why the girl had to act like this or talk back to the parents.
Right.
So if you bring someone who can relate, because in Lion King, you can really miss out a lot of things in it. But if you bring somebody who can relate to that, then the kids can also understand the show. Like, oh, now we get it. Why? Simba had to run away, for example, why Nala had to encourage him, you are the king, you have to come back, and you know why he had to stand up and have that authority, or why he could not yell at or fight Nala when he was aggressive, or he couldn't fight other lionesses because he's a lion, you know, things like that. And then kids can have an idea because somebody can relate to that.
That's so interesting. Yeah, because there is a lot of that interpersonal stuff in this story. I mean, even just like I'm thinking like the whole elephant graveyard, the fact that they went and did that has a totally different meaning.
Yes.
It's much higher stakes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Okay. So I think that's really important. And I always get frustrated when people use dramaturgy as a way to explain away appropriation, or is like, well, it's okay, we're gonna do this show that we should not be doing, and we're just gonna learn a lot about the culture. That is not really how it works. And I think that Lion King has like some malleable like stuff in it because they are animals, and so they're not actual human beings on the stage interacting with each other. It's to human
there's some wiggle room in the show for sure, where it's like Hairspray, you just don't have wiggle room. You know?
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, there's all white productions of Hairspray produced all the time. And that's an example of, like, when I'm like, yeah, that doesn't work. I'm sorry. And I'm not sorry if I'm offending you right now. I guess I am sorry that I'm offending you, but also not. So
it's such a specific time in so our country specific. And history.
Yeah. Like, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Like, same thing, like, I'm looking at my wall, like, nobody will get this reference, but Fela, the musical about Fela Kuti, you could not do that musical unless you had, like, the correct people there from that culture to do that, because it would not make sense. But mm-hmm. Lion King is a little different. And I think that you guys brought really interesting perspectives to that. Mm-hmm. And then I think my other question, and this is something that I've been in lots of rooms and seen done really poorly, and a couple times seen really done well. How do you make sure that the folks that you're bringing into the room, like when you're doing this kind of work, feel validated and not tokenized? Or not having to speak as the, like, the voice for the entire culture. Because I think that gets, I'll see that a lot, right? Like, they'll be like, we're going to do this show and we're going to bring in so-and-so because they're slightly related to this culture, or they are. But then, like, there's nothing else necessarily done and they just kind of become a token in the room. Mm. I'm just curious how you guys do that. Because this is becoming something that's happening more and more in the industry. So at some point it'll start happening at schools as well. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I would not have agreed to have done this production if Evelyn was our only resource, right? Okay. It was super important to me that the producers and the parent community was willing to engage on multiple levels. Mm-hmm. And so, again, like, to really dig in and invite and make sure that families that were part of this larger community knew that they had a voice at the table. Mm-hmm. And so I think having had that artist that was part of our scenic design and was part of our costume design on that level, and then having JHP come in and be able to speak to and demonstrate and, like, hands-on with the performing arts side of the culture. And then also having Evelyn in leadership, I hope that you didn't feel tokenized.
I didn't.
Because we weren't just looking to any one person to be the voice on this. Mm-hmm. And we were also, you know, by having those lobby displays, encouraging people, like, here, learn more. And, you know, we also invited like the local step group, and we widened our search. Not everyone said yes and came to be part of it. But we really tried to get as many voices to the table as possible.
Yeah. What did you... Okay, so I'm curious about this lobby. Obviously I am, because I love lobbies. What did you get... Can you talk more about the lobby that... Like, what did you do in your lobby to more engage the community?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think I had grander plans, and this was our first time around really doing this. But, I mean, our vision was that we would have multiple tables representing multiple different countries. Mm-hmm. In the end, we mostly had the JHP, which is an organization that represents multiple countries, but they had, like, a big, you know, photo backdrop that people were coming in and talking with them and engaging with them. And then the work didn't stop. After the show, too, we actually partnered with them on their big cultural festival, and we had a special rate that our Dandelion Drama students could take advantage of, so that we were then going to their event as well and supporting their work. And then they are also, we partner with them at our local arts festival as well, and always make sure we go and direct our students, like, hey, have you gone and checked out the cultural rooms yet? So I think it has to be an ongoing thing as well, right? Okay. Where we are also trying to go into their space and support what they're doing. And so, you know, it's, for me, one of the fun quotes that I'm loving right now is that people go where they're celebrated. Mm-hmm. They do not want to go where they're tolerated. And so that's the difference, is having that celebration and respect and honor that's not just like, oh, we're doing you a favor.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, no, we are partners. And with JHP, too, like, I've been working with them, too, like, for other projects, not just Lion King. Like, do you have music directors? Do you have teachers? Do you have choreographers? We want your voice at the table across all of our shows.
Right.
And so I think that's the thing, is you do the work before, during, and after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, I've seen that happen where, like, you'll spend an entire season, like, people, like, okay, I have a couple of things. I hate when people are like, this season we're doing X, and like they focus in on a very specific community, because I'm like, but I don't hate it from like the idea. The idea is brilliant and beautiful. Like, let's celebrate different stories and different ideas. But then if you're only looking at like incorporating them in that season, then it's like really useless, right? Like, mm-hmm. you have to find ways that, because art is for everyone. And we yes. should always be, and we're telling human stories. And mm-hmm. so it's not enough to just be like, cool, thank you for coming to this story. This is the one story that you're allowed to be involved in mm-hmm. because it the people on stage look like you, or it's your culture. But then you know what the rest of this is all for white people and you can't be here. Or this is all for rich people and you can't be here. Sure. Like mm-hmm. you need to have that ongoing that community. So like you should be always evolving and finding ways to bring different people to the table. And if you need to do that in a way that through the first entry point is like through a show that is like a more targeted specific mm-hmm. thing, but then they should be there. Like,
for sure.
Great. Come be our music directors. Come do these things. Come see our shows, because we're all human and these are human stories.
Totally.
And I think that's really smart, because I've seen it happen where theaters will do that and then they lose that entire community because the next year they focus on a different one and there's no change or there's no carryover, sure. which from like a professional theater standpoint, like you're always trying to grow patrons and everything. So that doesn't mm-hmm. work if you do that sure. way.
I think that's why Lion King was not a show that we could have done in our first, second or third year. Mm. I think that it came after we did Wizard of Oz, where every single Dorothy was a girl of color. Mm. And I think it came after doing a show that I wrote called Tall Tales, where mm-hmm. Last of the Moon, where we exercised and had conversations with our students about, hey, we're going to be sharing some legends from Native cultures, but we're going to do this in a way that is through shadow puppetry, or we're going to have people that are on stage being constellations acting out the story, because we are not going to any longer ever put someone in a headdress on stage, because mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. is sacred. And so I think we had set up this foundation of several years so that we had that base of respect and support and of proving to our students,
yeah,
you know, that we're doing Lion King, and that, you know, I think the same way that we might do Cinderella and all the blonde little blonde girls, I'm one of them, would be like, yes, I get to be Cinderella because I look like Disney Cinderella.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would have hated if we did Lion King and then our students of color suddenly felt like, oh, yay, this is my chance to have a lead. Mm-hmm. But I think we had already broken down that
right.
by showing our students year after year that they were going to be cast based on their not on their looks, but on their merit.
Yeah, and that's such, it takes time. It takes time, and mm-hmm. it takes intentional show selection. Mm-hmm. I mean, just those are really great examples that you just gave, and just conscious casting choices. Yeah, I love that. And I think that that can be really inspirational to other educators, especially to like younger educators or folks who are taking over new theater programs.
Totally.
Like kind of like what you're doing this year. But like taking over theater programs to remember, like, you can change the culture and you can mm-hmm. create a program that does what you want and tells the stories on stage that you want, but it might take some time.
Absolutely. And I know you've given the example, Lindsay, too, that sometimes you have a board or you have a governance of your program that says, nope, we are going to do the next hot Disney thing.
Yep.
But I would say maybe even if you're stuck in that situation, it does not mean that you have to traditionally cast your actors to look like the Correct. Disney aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And so there are lots of ways within those timeframes that you can make equitable choices and bring people to the table.
So this conversation, I feel like, could keep going on and on because there's so much to talk about, but you guys have given, I think, so many great, like, applicable examples that relate to The Lion King, which I love because The Lion King is something that a lot of people are pretty familiar with. And so I hope that if you're listening to this and you're an educator, like, or a director or theater maker of any type, like, we talked about The Lion King, but I think a lot of these things can be applied to any work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And to keep in mind, like, this idea of, like, finding out who is in your community? What are the resources? What are the ways that you can actually engage with folks? And how can you bring the different aspects of the script alive to your students rather than just like, we're going to smile and do a jazz square. The end. But thank you guys so very much for coming on. This has been an absolute pleasure to have you guys here and hanging out. If people want to know more about either of your work, is there any way to do that? And Melanie, this is also a great time if you want to plug any of the work you've done. That'd be great.
Yeah. So you can learn more about Evelyn and I both through dandeliondrama.org. And that's dandeliondrama.org. And see lots of pictures of our work there. I also am, you can find more about the plays that I've written. I've written a ton of musicals for youth at lionsandsamuels.com.
And you wrote a really fun one this summer. Is that available online?
Yes, it's launching soon.
Okay.
So we have two titles that we're launching really soon. Our website's all up there and we're just fine tuning. We have Summer School Rocks, which is kind of like Matilda and School of Rock and I don't know what, all meshed in with lots of heart. And so super fun rock musical that's available. And then we have Vasilisa, which is an Russian fairy tale set in modern times that really explores the idea of students being scared of ageism and like the fear of the elderly. And that's Vasilisa the Ordinary. And so, yeah, those will be launching soon, too. And then through Lions and Samuels, also I've been starting to launch some really fun opportunities for professional development, and I love being a mentor with Reef Theater as well. So yeah, if you want to work more with me on your equity plan and growing your program and making lots of small radical changes that can make a huge difference, then you can find me online.
Yeah, so many great things. And it's Extraordinary Theater, is that
yeah,
right?
So okay. that's kind of my tagline.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's not official website.
That's your
so
Facebook,
you can find me through
right?
Lions. Yeah, you can find me through Lions and Samuels or Extraordinary Theater on Facebook.
Yeah, it's great. And Melanie is one of our mentors for Re Theater, and she's absolutely fantastic. I'm so glad she's on the team and just really helping people make really conscious, beautiful changes in their programs that don't take a mountain of effort.
Yes.
So, yeah. Awesome. Ellen, is there any other way, or should everybody just check you out through Dandelion? Is that the best? Okay.
Yes, that's the best way.
Great. Well, if anybody listening has any questions, if you guys are working on a production of The Lion King, you can always reach out and let us know. The email is in the show notes. But thank you guys once again for coming on. I so appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
my pleasure.
Yeah, we'll see you guys next week. Okay, bye.
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 Episode. If you enjoyed it, I would love if you would leave us a review or rate us on iTunes or Stitcher, or share us with your friends on social media so that we are able to help spread the word around flipping the script and inspire people to make art that matters across the world. As a thank you for taking the time to review us and share us, each month I'm going to be giving away a Theater Swag gift basket. All that you need to do in order to win is just share us and review us, and every month I'm going to select a review or a share at random, read it on the air, and if it's yours, you will be the lucky winner of this awesome Theater Swag bag, which is going to have so much stuff in it that's essential for the theater nerd, no matter if you're a teacher or student or just an enthusiast. If you want to find out more about Re Theater and our programs, our online classes, and our community for educators, just go to www.retheaterco.com. Theater is spelled with an R-E. Or you can follow us on Facebook at Re Theater. If you want to know about the work that I'm up to and find out more about Re Theater, you can follow me on Instagram. I'm there all the time giving out lots of tips and ideas and just sharing about how awesome theater education is. You can follow me at @Lindsay_CuiavaBar. If you have any questions about today's episode or thoughts you'd like to share with us, or maybe you have some topics you'd like to see us cover in the future, I would totally love to hear from you. You can send me an email anytime at lindsay@retheaterco.com. Just make sure you spell Lindsay, A-Y, and I look forward to hearing from you. As always, thanks for listening and keep on making art that matters.